Street.
Part 2.
The four major air bases of Al Udeid in Qatar, Al Dhafra in the Emirates, Al Al Salem in Kuwait, and Mowafaq Salti in Jordan are the landing and takeoff sites for F-15 and F-16 fighter bombers, as well as large fleets of U.S. Air Force aerial tankers and AWACS, which have played a significant role in the U.S. military's year-long operation in the Red Sea and Yemen. Although this large naval coalition has not succeeded in achieving all of its predetermined goals, it has played an important role in defending the Zionist entity, and without the direct intervention of the U.S. and its allies, the Zionists would have faced much more severe consequences. In fact, the fact that among the Western countries that are members of the coalition, only the two countries of the U.S. and Britain have directly bombed Yemeni soil once again shows the root of most of the conspiracies against the country and people of Yemen in recent years have originated in Washington, D.C. and London.
The Houthis have locked down the Suez Canal, backed by Iran, for months. They have fired at U.S. Navy warships using anti-ship ballistic missiles, Bill. And what are we doing? Nothing.
This was only a brief description of the unequal conditions of the war between Yemen's Ansarullah and the great Western Zionist coalition in the Red Sea battle, and in a situation where the Yemenis had to simultaneously pursue their three important goals, that is, attacking deep into occupied territories, attacking commercial ships affiliated with the Zionist regime and their escort vessels, and also defending Yemeni soil against heavy air attacks by the United States and the UK. The long years of war with the aggressive Arab coalition led to the growth and prosperity of the local weapons industry of the Yemeni army and popular forces. The experiences of the war against the Saudi Emirati forces, the enemy armed to the teeth, led the Yemenis to design and mass-produce weapons tailored to their needs in the field of defense and attack, so that they could be used in the fight against a bigger and more powerful army to defend the oppressed people of Palestine.
It seems to me that they're using more advanced and more lethal weapons than they were in the earlier parts of the operation.
Although many of the targets that were attacked in Saudi Arabia were at distances of less than 500 kilometers, and weapons with a range of nearly 100 kilometers were sufficient to attack Riyadh or Jeddah, the Yemeni army, with foresight and certainty that the next war will be with the U.S. and its illegitimate child, the Zionist regime, acquired a large arsenal of long-range missiles and drones with a range of more than 2,000 kilometers.
Day-to-day stress of knowing that we are being shot at definitely gives a realism to the whole experience that this is not a normal deployment that we are on.
There are few experts and researchers of political system issues in the world who are unfamiliar with weapons such as the Samad and Quds, and from the port of Eilat in the south to the port of Haifa in the north of occupied territories, there are few settlers that have not tasted the bitter taste of encountering the long-range weapons of the Yemeni army. Zulfaghar, Tufan, the Palestine 1 ballistic missiles, and Quds cruise missiles have been used repeatedly against Eilat port facilities, leaving the port's docks almost deserted and causing heavy economic damage to the Zionist regime. Suicide drones of the Samad and Yafa families have also been used repeatedly in successful attacks on the heart of the occupied territories and the city of Tel Aviv. According to Israeli sources, by the end of July 2024, about 220 Yemeni missiles and drones had been fired at the occupied territories. But the real nightmare for the Zionist regime and its boastful air defense came when the Yemeni army began using the Palestine II hypersonic missiles, a weapon that, in several firings against the city of Tel Aviv at a range of 2,000 kilometers, managed to bypass all Israeli defense systems.
And that's where what's going on in the Red Sea with the Houthis becomes relevant, because the United States there, after almost 6 months of effort, has been unable to open the Red Sea. And we've had an aircraft carrier group. We had our coalition of the willing, the allies. And in fact, on Saturday, the French said, oh, we're out of here. This is too violent. We're not used to this level of violence, and we're not willing to take the risk.
But a major and crucial battle took place at sea. Yemeni fighters had vowed never to allow safe passage to the commercial fleet of the regime and its supporting countries as long as the Israeli aggression against the oppressed people of Gaza continues. The past year may be considered the quietest on the northern Red Sea route to the Gulf of Aden. Dozens of successful attacks on Israeli, American, and European ships allied with the Zionist entity caused many of the world's major shipping companies to stop using the Red Sea trade route for long periods of time.
The Houthis have a really strong ideological bias to destroy Israel.
Sure.
And to destroy the United States. They say that's fundamental to their worldview. We should take their word for that and believe them when they say it. And so as a result of the war in Gaza, they have taken action to attack Israel.
With the beginning of the Yemeni attacks, the major shipping giants, including Italian Swiss company MSC, Maersk of Denmark, Costco from China, and CMA CGM from France, and Hapag-Lloyd from Germany, announced they will no longer operate on the Red Sea route. These five companies together handle more than 67% of maritime transfers. In addition to these companies, Evergreen from Taiwan, One from Japan, HMM from South Korea, Yangming from Taiwan, and Zim from Israel, which are in 6th to 10th place among the largest shipping companies, also announced the suspension of their activities on the Red Sea route. The oil company BP also announced the suspension of its tanker traffic on this route. All of these shipping companies are forced to reroute around the African continent and pass through the Cape of Good Hope for an alternative route, which will increase the duration and cost of the sea voyage many times over. Western sources themselves acknowledge the high volume of missiles and drone attacks by the Yemeni army over the past year.
Ultimately, if it continues, it will lead to higher prices. The ships that, for example, move containers, but they're being tied up for longer on these voyages, so the shipping companies are already charging more per day to charter out their boats to move containers, and that will feed through to consumers that there's no way that this gets absorbed by the supply chain. The best way to stop this becoming a crisis is to pursue diplomacy.
According to statistics published by Western sources, as of October 7th, 2024, and the anniversary of Operation Al-Aqsa Flood, the Yemeni army has used 446 drones, 151 anti-ship ballistic missiles, 12 anti-ship cruise missiles, 10 land attack cruise missiles, 55 long-range suicide boats, and 9 armed combat boats to attack the commercial and military fleet affiliated with the coalition and the Israeli regime. As a result of these attacks, according to the Western side, 2 cases resulted in the sinking of a commercial ship, 1 case of seizure and transfer of the ship to the Yemeni coast, 40 cases of severe damage, and 16 cases of unspecified damage to the commercial fleet in the Red Sea, and in 28 cases, the attacks did not result in serious damage to the targeted ships. The Yemeni army has used various weapons in its attacks on the commercial and military fleet of the coalition. The suicide drones that were used for attacks on the occupied territories could also be used to attack ships by changing their role. The Kassif series of suicide drones with a range of over 150 kilometers, the Raqib with a range of over 2,000 kilometers, and the Samad family, whose latest version, the Yaffa drone, successfully hit the city of Tel Aviv, were responsible for attacks on hostile ships in the Red Sea as well.
10% of the world's commerce passes within range of their very cheap but deadly one-way drones, aka flying bombs.
Remotely controlled unmanned vessels were also a very effective weapon against targets even 200 kilometers from the Yemeni coast.
Which really changes the dynamic there. And I think the most recent merchant vessel that was hit and is sinking was hit by an unmanned surface vessel.
During the war with the Saudi coalition, the Yemeni army also managed to target several oil tankers and a Saudi naval Al-Madina-class ship using suicide boats. And in the recent naval battle, numerous images were recorded of Yemeni guided boats carrying several hundred kilograms of explosives successfully hitting enemy merchant ships. The Bahr al-Ahmar, Tankil, and Asif anti-ship ballistic missiles with a range of between 200 and 500 kilometers are one of the most important assets of the Yemeni army, and they are displayed in the parades marking the anniversary of the September Revolution before the recent incidents. According to the admission of U.S. Navy commanders, when Yemeni anti-ship ballistic missiles are fired at them or commercial ships in the Red Sea, they have only 15 seconds from the moment they observe the missile to react and intercept that missile, which has led to many interception failures and missiles hitting their targets.
I don't think it will stop if the Gaza war ends, because now and for the past 20 years, the Houthis say they're at war with America and Israel. I mean, their logo is death to America, death to Israel. And so that's what's at stake, is that the U.S. is forced out of the region. Now there is, you know.
The Americans never imagined that they would one day be challenged in a long-term battle in international waters, even by major military powers such as China and Russia. But Ansarallah's clever strategy greatly undermined the long-held notions of America's invincibility in naval combat. Before the outbreak of the Civil War and the start of the conflict with Saudi Arabia, the Yemenis also possessed the Chinese-made C-801 and Soviet-made P-15 anti-ship cruise missiles, which over time were mass-produced with local versions of these missiles under the names of Al-Mandab and Robayich, respectively, and were also used in the Red Sea battle.
I don't think people really understand just kind of how deadly serious it is what we're doing, and how you know, under threat the ships continue to be. I mean, the Houthis are shooting every day. Our ships remain under threat every day, and we're doing a great job defending ourselves, great job defending the force, but it is relentless.
The West or the Yemenis? Which side was the winner of the Red Sea battle? The Red Sea battle over the past year can perhaps be considered one of the most unequal battles in modern history, and perhaps even in all of history. The difference in firepower and technology available to the two sides was so great that before the start of the naval coalition and the heavy airstrikes by the U.S. and Britain on Yemen, many analysts predicted that the Ansarallah would be able to resist in these conditions and support the people of Gaza for a few weeks. But the Yemenis proved that by accepting the sharp difference in capabilities and all the dangers that were on the way, they could win the battle of wills in the Red Sea. But why do we say the Yemenis won the big Red Sea battle? First off, the Yemenis continued to fire despite months of bombing and so-called precision air and missile attacks by the Western coalition, and in the meantime, we are witnessing that especially the European naval forces that have entered the Red Sea battle have realized their great weaknesses and inability to confront the Yemeni army. From missiles that were not fired from the platform to mistaking friendly drones for enemy ones, and problems in various systems of mostly European ships that have not even participated in a series of serious exercises and maneuvers in years, these were among the issues that, in a case like the Danish Armed Forces, led to the dismissal of several senior military personnel. Over the course of several months, the various countries that had sent their ships to this field had fired so many defensive missiles at Yemeni drones and missiles that their vertical launchers ran out of missiles and were now facing a major problem. They never imagined they would face a situation where their missile reserves would run out against Yemen. Many European ships were forced to retreat either to Djibouti or to the Mediterranean Sea to reload missiles and other necessary items so that they could return to the battlefield once again, which of course gave the Ansarallah a good opportunity to find a gap in the Western fleet's defensive umbrella.
This is doing wonders for their branding, actually, mm-hmm. that it isn't just the Palestinian cause that they're focused on.
So call a ceasefire now and end the positive branding. If you want to stop the Houthis doing what they're doing, then call a ceasefire right now.
The Houthis would stop doing what they're doing.
They have literally said that that's why they're doing what they're doing. They have not previously blocked those routes. And I also think the West needs to start to understand that you cannot just go around playing cowboys in the world. There are consequences to your actions. You cannot just go around bombing people's countries, ignoring international law, and expect no repercussions. For every cause, there is a consequence. And just because you don't like a couple of guys trying to resist,
I mean, these
the fact
are
that this is
now prescribed terrorists.
Sure, according to Western governments,
well,
they are
also
terrorist
according
governments.
To the
these people are creating a total trade blockade. Which is causing inflation, which is causing all sorts of problems to everybody.
25,000 people are dead in Gaza right now. There are over 60,000 people injured with no access to food, water, aid. How dare we have a conversation about trade when there are children right now being treated without anesthetic?
Well, the
there are things that,
that
require us to make some sacrifices, and this would be
one of them. They do have the global economy, global markets hostage.
Good for them, Bill Browder. Good for them. Cease fire now. Cease fire now.
We're going to have to leave it there. But Dr. Miriam Francois.
You cannot allow these people to be decimated and expect there to be no consequences.
But there seems to be no better reason or statement than looking at economic figures to show who succeeded in implementing their will in the Red Sea. Was previously said that about 15% of the volume of global maritime trade and 30% of the world's container traffic passes through the Gulf of Aden, the Bab el-Mandab Strait, and the Red Sea. Also, the costs of maritime transportation through the Suez Canal have increased due to the crisis in the Red Sea. The port of Eilat in the Gulf of Aqaba, which was actually the main goal of the Yemenis to prevent commercial ships from docking in this port and put pressure on the Israeli entity, has faced an 85% reduction in activity, and half of its employees are on the verge of dismissal. The Zionist regime had high hopes for the development of the Eilat port, especially to participate in China's so-called One Belt, One Road initiative, to the point that their heavy joint investment with China in this port and even Chinese investment in several other infrastructure projects in the occupied territories caused Donald Trump to strongly protest the Zionists, resulting in a decrease in the level of cooperation between the two sides. The famous economic institution J.P. Morgan announced the recent incidents in the Red Sea have caused a 1% increase in global inflation. On the other hand, shipping costs, especially the increase in time required to travel through alternative sea routes, and of course the increase in the cost of marine insurance, in addition to the increase in the cost of personal wages, in addition to the delay in the arrival of products to specific destinations, have all been among the obvious and hidden economic costs of this conflict. On the other hand, Egyptian officials of the Suez Canal have also announced an increase in the passage rate of between 5 and 15%, which itself increases the total costs. Some ships that have chosen the route around the African continent and the Cape of Good Hope must also face very bad weather conditions in that area in southern Africa on the one hand, and at the same time, an increase of several days in delivery times of cargo on board on the other. For example, the cost of transporting a container from Shanghai, China to the port of Rotterdam, the Netherlands, on a normal route that crosses the Red Sea in February last year was about $1,000. While in February of 2024, this figure increased 6.5 times to $6,500 per container. What Yemen has managed to do is that at least a significant portion of the world's population, especially those living in capitalist countries, has been looking for reasons for these price increases due to their increase in the costs of goods and services, and has become more aware of the pain and suffering of the oppressed people of Gaza and Palestine. But what has received much attention is the cost that the United States and the West are paying to counter Yemeni missiles. They are destroying threats that are much cheaper in terms of price with expensive weapons. For example, several media outlets have highlighted the use of a standard $2 million missile by the United States Navy to intercept Yemeni drones that cost $20,000. These statements are rooted in truth. Air and missile defense interceptors are relatively expensive. Budget documents for fiscal year 2024 show the U.S. defensive missiles are in total almost twice as expensive as offensive missiles. When the average unit costs are calculated, U.S. offensive missiles are probably more expensive than the Yemeni offensive missiles. In any case, after more than a year of conflict in the Red Sea, and even looking at the conflicts in the occupied territories and northern borders with Lebanon, we see the resistance forces have gained a certain self-confidence, much of which is due to the heavy pressure exerted by the Yemeni resistance in the Red Sea against the Zionist entity and its Western and Arab supporters.
Fiqh or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked among
the Holy Prophet of Islam is the example
of
self-purification is the most significant
factor.
Imamate is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism.
This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, Assalamu alaikum to you, dear listeners of Arab English Radio. Welcome to another episode of the program Ulama's Speech. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Donishman. Please stay tuned. We must observe justice in our life, especially when facing our family members. Both wife and husband might have their own mistakes in life. Mistakes, especially in married life, must not make us misbehave each other. We must see our own mistakes first. One of the functions of eyes is to see our own behaviors. Eye is the king of the body, and without eyes, we are not able to see both goodness and badness. The beauty of one's face is in the eyes. However, these are the eyes that can see the ugliness and evil too. We have both in the Holy Quran and Hadith corpus that Prophet Yusuf asked to shut his eyes when he wanted to pass from among the women of the castle. As said earlier, eyes are so important that they are called the king of the body. However, eyes have a problem that no other organ of the body has. They might make mistakes in not seeing ourselves and only seeing the faults of others. Therefore, we must not be like eyes, to see others and not see ourselves. Self-look reaches us to self-contemplation, and this is the key to prosperity in both this world and the hereafter. Thank you very much, dear listeners of Arab English Radio, for listening to this episode of the program Ulama's Speech, which was the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Donishman. To find more about this program and our other programs, please visit our new website at iranradio.ir. We leave you in Allah's care and goodbye.
Option for today and a better tomorrow. IRIB English Radio. internet address is parstoday.ir/en.
IRIB English Radio presents The Month of Allah. Let's be with Hujjatul Islam Sayyid Abbas Razavian.
As I look to nature's beauty, dazzled am I, knowing everything calls on you, the Lord Most High.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome to the program Month of Allah. As the month of Ramadan is winding down, this is a very sad time for the believers. Because if we were to understand how great the month of Ramadan truly was, we wish it would last the entire month. Because we are the guests of Allah, because this is His month. Therefore, when the month of Ramadan comes to an end, some people are worrying about what are they going to do afterwards? What's going to happen to their spirituality afterwards? To address this question, there is positive news that now that we have purified ourselves, we have done repentance, we have sought the forgiveness of God, we have done many different acts of worship, we are now in a better position to continue our spiritual journey after the month of Ramadan. That we should not make the month of Shawwal a month that we are now relaxed. A month that if I followed and obeyed the commands of God during the month of Ramadan, that now I can be much more relaxed in the month of Shawwal. That should not be true. Because when a person acts and performs amal as-salih, good actions, genuine actions, that itself is a nur, that itself is a light. And that's going to guide them spiritually towards a higher level. Therefore, now that we have all these great actions, because the night of Qadr, the actions are worth more than 80 years of worship. Now that we have put these actions behind us, and now that we have performed these actions, we have light, we have nur, and that we have a better chance to increase our spirituality after the month of Ramadan. When we look at one of the traditions from Imam Baqir alayhi salam, the fifth Imam, he has narrated to us, said, "Udu anfusakum al khair." Get yourself accustomed to khair. In the holy month of Ramadan, how much have we gotten accustomed to reciting the Holy Quran? It's much easier for us now. So when you're accustomed to something, it's much easier for you to go on the same track and continue reading the Holy Quran and make it part of your daily routine. When we think about our prayers that we did, when we think about that connection that we had, when we think about fasting, even recommended fasting, it's much easier for us to continue the same track that we had, because this is how spirituality works. When you get accustomed to something, it's much easier for you for it to occur, and you don't even think about it anymore. Those that have performed mustahabat and recommended deeds, and they have gotten themselves used to it, it becomes for them very natural, and they don't even think about doing those mustahab things. For example, having wudu when you go outside, having wudu and having ablution, and you're always cleansed and pure, it becomes something second nature for us. So this is the good, glad tidings that we have, that after the month of Ramadan ends, we have a new light, we have more nur, and we are more accustomed to doing good. We're accustomed to going to the masjid. Let's not break this habit. Some of these habits that we have now are good habits. And the other narration, it says, "Man ya'mal yazdad quwwatan," from Imam Ali alayhi salam. When a person acts, he becomes stronger. We are now much more stronger. The way that we can fight against our nafs, we can fight against our lower desires, we are much more stronger. We had taken away water and drink and food from ourselves. Therefore, we are the most powerful people when it comes to fighting our nafs and our lower desires. We are stronger. And if a person, man yugassir fil amal yazdad fatra, if a person has shortcomings in his actions, he becomes weaker. So after the month of Ramadan, this is when a believer should shine the most. This is when a believer continues, because the stages of spirituality happen slowly, and slowly you increase your connection to God and you reach a higher level. Let's not go back down and think that the month of Ramadan is and has ended, therefore I'm going to be and go back to the same person I used to be. You are now a new person. Let's continue and strive and progress in the path of spirituality after the month of Ramadan.
قال الإمام الحسن عليه السلام: التفكر حياة قلب البصير.
Imam Hassan alayhi salam said, thinking is the life of the heart of the cognizant.
La ilaha illallah, la ilaha illallah, la ilaha illallah, ma lana rabbun siwa.
La ilaha illallah, la ilaha illallah.
Questions and answers in Islamic upbringing.
I have a son. He's really in fond of football, and he's so weak in his lesson courses. I really don't know what should I do.
Could you tell me when we have to start upbringing our kids, that is, from the very beginning of the birth?
I have a little son, and he's so disrespectful. I want to know how to treat him according to the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them.
Answering parents' questions in upbringing their children in an Islamic way.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran for big and small.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners. Welcome to another enlightening episode of Islamic Upbringing, where we dive deep into the essential aspects of nurturing your youth in line with Islamic teachings. In this program, our discussions are rooted in the guidance of the Holy Quran and the timeless wisdom of Hadith from our beloved Prophet Muhammad, may Allah's peace and blessings be upon him and his purified family, and the insightful narratives of our noble Imams. I'm glad to have with us today Brother Muhammad Liaqat Abbas, a research scholar from the Seminary of Qom, who possesses a wealth of knowledge in both Islamic studies as well as psychology. So, Brother Liaqat Abbas, assalamu alaikum.
Alaikum salam, sister.
A very warm welcome.
Thank you so much.
Brother Liaqat, you know, we have been talking about teens who struggle with the lack of confidence, and you told us some of the strategies how to deal with it. You said first thing is to reduce the anxiety levels, and you explained that in the light of ahadith. You also said that, like we have in Quran, that seek help from patience and prayers and relate it to anxiety. So it's like, do not relate it to just a few things, but also to anxiety, as Imam explained this for someone. So yeah, again, the stage is all yours.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. So when it comes to lack of confidence, we see that, example, a 16-year-old or a 15-year-old is struggling with a subject like mathematics,
right?
Okay? And feels that he's not smart enough,
right?
Or she's not smart enough when it is compared to his or her friends.
Right.
Why? Because they are doing it amazingly awesome. And this particular teen is like, oh my God, I don't even know what the question
says. The particular concepts, the basic
like
concepts.
What is the concept? What is the question asking
right.
me? And these people are writing down solutions on solutions, and they are turning pages on pages.
Yeah.
And this unfortunate teen is like, oh my God, what's going on? Like, he's lacking confidence. Like, what to do now. At the end of the day, this will lead to the teen avoiding studies because now he's unable to cope up with that particular subject or even like or many other subjects as well.
Right.
And he's unable to ask the tutor or the teacher.
Right.
He's seeing everyone is studying very nicely. They are doing everything. They are doing their homeworks. And this is like going backward in the backward direction.
Yeah.
So what's the solution? So the best solution is to speak to the teacher over here. The best solution is to discuss with the teacher, saying, okay, look, I'm not understanding the concepts. Whenever you say something, I don't understand it. So after that, when you say to do, like example, when you give 4 to 5 problem sums, I am like lagging behind.
Right.
So I end up seeing the book of my friend or my classmate, and I end up copying everything, and I don't understand anything. This is the first thing. The second step, of course, is to discuss with the parents, okay? And the third step is definitely the parents should involve into the solutions over here, should see what the problem actually is. Is it hard? Is the subject hard? Or is the teen getting diverted in the class?
Yeah.
What is the real issue? Why is it happening? And number four is definitely like if it is not sorting everything, like everything is not sorted in the class, joining like private sessions or
right.
private tuition example will definitely help.
Yeah.
I remember it was my example. It was my grade 7 when I was in class 7.
Yeah.
I used to lag behind in mathematics, to be
okay.
frank.
Yeah.
So I told to my parents. I told my mother first and then my father. And they were like, okay, let's make you like let's keep you in a private session or a private tutor. But of course, there were 3 to 4 people with me even in the private
tuition
as well. So alhamdulillah, like I saw a lot of improvement. Like I gained confidence. And you know, like when I used to go to the school, I used to answer questions. Okay, like who wants to come and solve the problem on the board, example,
right.
on the whiteboard or blackboard. I feel like I want to go ahead, like because I got a lot of confidence, you see. So join
some extra classes.
Yeah, exactly. Extra classes will definitely help.
Right.
In
and
learning. Yeah.
We'll talk about more strategies after a short break. Tell listeners, stay tuned.
Give thanks to Allah for the moon and the stars. Praise Him all day for what is and what was. Take hold of your iman. Don't give in to Shaitan. Oh, you who believe, please give thanks to Allah. Allahu Ghafoor, Allahu Rahim, Allahu Yuhibbul Muhsinin, wa Khaliquna, wa Rasiquna, wa Huwa ala kulli shay'in.
Welcome back. You're listening to Islamic Upbringing, and Brother Liaquat Abbas is here with us. In the studio, we're talking about the strategies to boost confidence in teenagers.
So basically, asking for help is very important. So example, it is very important for the teen, for the parents, and also for the teachers
to work together. One thing that you said is very important here, that you said like when I personally was struggling with one subject, for example, mathematics, and then I was unable to solve the questions, then I happened to talk to my parents. So this communication, and then they resolved it, and then it was solved for you. How it was solved was you happened to be talking to them. So this is very important. Like if a teen is struggling, he has to talk about it. Or parents have to ask.
Yes.
And they have to look into the matter.
Yeah, definitely. The parents have to ask, like, if their son or daughter are struggling in any subject, example, they have to look. You know, the thing is, what normally parents do is they see the grades. Or, you know what, like, they see the report card or, like, the final report of the performance of the of their child. And they're like, oh, mashallah, our child is amazing. He's getting good grades, example, she... And they are performing amazing, nice. And what's happening behind, they don't know. Like maybe the teen is copying in the exam, like he's a cheating example, which is not nice and shouldn't be happening at all. Inshallah, we'll speak about it in the later episode probably. But The thing is, over here, this is not the solution. So,
right.
So rather than looking at the progress report of the child,
keep on asking,
like, did you understand?
Right.
Or example, maybe like sitting in a while, like maybe in a day or two, or like 3 days, once in a while, like maybe once in 3 days.
Right.
Looking
so give time.
If the teen is performing homework in the correct manner without taking any help.
Right.
And in today's world, everything is available on AI, on laptop, on internet,
unfortunately.
So this shouldn't be happening, like copy-paste shouldn't be happening.
Right.
So understanding is very important.
Understanding, so
the teen, did he or she understand the concept, and are they doing it on their own, or are they taking help of any computer or laptop, maybe?
So, like, although the tech has got the potential to boost one's knowledge and confidence, actually, but at the same time, it has its own threats. Well, that's not our topic right now. We are talking about that if a teen is taking help from these things to overcome his anxiety and other things, like he's lacking confidence, you got to be having a check and resolve the issue properly. And then brother, you were saying about resolving the issue with you said we together have to resolve it, and you wanted to say that it's a kind of a triangle.
It's a kind of triangle. Yes, definitely. It's a kind of like triangle solution where three, like the three meaning the student, the teacher, and the parents are involved together in order to solve a particular problem. Example, the teacher can say, okay, you know what? Issues if you're finding your language difficult, example, if it is English language. And wherever you find a problem, like, or wherever you don't understand a word, just underline it and you can ask me. So you see, like, this pressure of not understanding the word or the context
vocab,
or the paragraph is sorted. So the teen is going to ask, okay, excuse me, ma'am, example, what is this?
I
have this question. I don't understand this word.
Right.
Even if the word is simple, the teacher can encourage the student by
asking,
saying, oh, amazing, you have asked such a beautiful question.
Right.
Example, if it is confidence.
Right.
The teen is like, what is confidence?
Yeah.
So the teen, amazing question. Guys, you know what is confidence?
Yeah.
Come on, someone, example, you, what is confidence? You, what is confidence? You see? So by this, the teen will feel, oh, he or she is encouraged. And this kind of lack of confidence itself will go away, inshallah.
Yes.
Yeah.
We'll discuss more on that. Let's take a short break here.
يا مقضي الخيرات يا مقضي الخيرات
The Prophet صلى الله عليه وآله وسلم said, A righteous child is indeed a flower from the flowers of paradise.
يا مقضي الخيرات يا مقضي الخيرات
Welcome back. This is Islamic Upbringing. Brother Liaquat Abbas is here with me in the studio, and we're talking about strategies that will boost the confidence. Well, so far, we have reached a conclusion that the problem should be resolved and looked after in a triangle with the teen himself, with the teacher, and the another corner of this triangle is the parents. We said what parents can do, what strategies they can apply. But first, in the first episode, we said that it's the teens themselves. They have to engage themselves. They have to participate in the things where they have to boost their confidence one or the other way. And then we said it is the parents. Parents have to look into the matter, and they have to go through different strategies to boost their confidence. And then we also reached another part of this triangle, that is the teachers, who are the builders of a nation. And Brother Liaquat, you were saying that they have to play a critical role in encouraging, for example, the simple question answering and question asking thing from the teenager. Yeah.
So definitely, if these kind of strategies are followed, example in academic pressure, which is quite a lot in today's world. Why? Because there's a lot of competition in today's world.
Right.
With regards to different things. In whatever field a person is going, there's a lot of competition. They are looking at the grades rather than looking at the amount of hard work.
Right.
Rather than looking at how much the teen is understanding.
Right.
Right now, what the school... schools or the institutions or colleges or universities want good grades.
Right.
Like they don't want, it's kind of industry or where people are being manufactured or where the kids or teens are being manufactured in such a manner that they could get good grades, unfortunately. The emotional aspect sometimes or like many a times in institutes are lacking, okay? So with these kind of backlogs, I would say, it's normal that a teen feels pressurized. Of course, there are teens, example, there are children, there are kids who are very intelligent. We are not talking about them. Why? Because they know, they understand it in one go, in a blink of an eye, example, and they do it. They solve the problem. So we're not talking about them.
Yeah.
But about them who lack confidence and
right.
feel pressurized, example. So these are the tips, inshallah, I followed, inshallah. And of course, with dua, with seeking help from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala.
Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, indeed.
It will help, yeah.
Yes. Thank you for being with us. Thank you for helping us with those insights. All dear listeners, one of the strategies that Prophet Muhammad, may Allah's peace and blessings be upon him and his purified family, says about boosting intellect is the recitation of Holy Quran. The more we'll ponder in it, the more we'll teach our children to ponder in the meanings of the Quran, it will increase both their memory and also intellect. Thank you for listening. Until another episode, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran for big and small. A way of life, a way of life, a way of life, a way of life. Islam is a way of life, a complete way.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. Shortwave, 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent. And FM, 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAD 5 and Intelsat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is iranradio.ir. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
More Palestinians fall victim to Israel's genocidal war on Gaza as the regime's military starts a new phase of ground operations in Rafah. Yemeni armed forces say that they have targeted U.S. aircraft carrier USS Harry S. Truman in the Red Sea in support of Palestine. Sirens blare in Tel Aviv and several other cities across the Israeli-occupied territories as Yemen fires hypersonic missiles at Ben-Gurion Airport. Good to have you with us. The Israeli regime continues with deadly attacks on Gaza, killing and injuring more innocent Palestinians as they mark Eid al-Fitr. 20 people were killed in the latest attacks, including at least 5 children. An airstrike on Al-Mawasi refugee camp claimed the lives of 3 young girls who were dressed in new clothes for what was supposed to be a day of celebration. 3 more people were